Welcome to Shir and Svarno Parsha Shmos. The Shir this evening, as well as throughout the week, is sponsored by Joel and Elke Hershkovitz, marking the yard site at the end of the week of Joel's father, Moshe Ephraim Hershkovitz, and Neshama Shel Aver Aliyah, Shesimosh Nachas Ruach, and the Torah Mitzvahs and Ma'asim Tovim, that the entire family is involved in. True to the name of the Parsha, Parsha Shmos opens up listing the names of the 12 sons of Yaakov Avinu, who came down to Mitzrayim, or more accurately, the 11 sons of Yaakov Avinu, who came down to Mitzrayim, and then adds, V'Yosef Hayo B'Mitzrayim. Yosef already was in Mitzrayim before the sons came down. And with regard to the significance of their names, the Sfarno makes the following comment. Haniskarim Bekan Hayu Ru'uyim Lehivada B'Shem. All of these 12 individuals are mentioned by name because of the stature which they possessed. Meaning, the Sfarno is introducing a concept, we saw this already a little bit back in Parshas Vayigash, and we'll revisit it in the next few moments, that to be named in Chumash is a feat. In other words, to have your name make it into the Chumash itself is indicative of some kind of stature that the person has, and it's not for naught. It's not that the Torah is just sort of arbitrarily listing off the names of the Shvatim at the beginning of Parshas Shmos, but rather the very listing of these individuals is to convey implicitly something about the august stature which they possessed. Ki kol echad mehem roi lios nechshav ish al shemo. Each of these individuals, these 12 sons of Yaakov Avinu, are fit to be mentioned, each one by name. Hamore al tsuraso ha'ishiyis. And each name says something about his personal qualities and the special nature that he possessed. So these are the fact that the Shvatim are mentioned gives them a certain stature. These 12 individuals, as long as they lived, they were literally luminaries for the Jewish people. Meaning, as long as the Shvatim lived, they were not only great tzaddikim in their own right, but as the Sfarno puts it, they were ma'oros, they were luminaries. They influenced others to go in the right path. V'lo yotza hador l'tarbus ra'ah. And because of that, as long as they were alive, none of the generation went off the path of Judaism. As all of these individuals were incredible sources of influence on the people around them. Omnam acharei mosam. However, after the Shvatim died, lo hayu ad tzadikim shebivneim kol kach hashuvim be'enei Elokim ve'adam. There were tzaddikim among the next generation after the Shvatim passed away, but they were not of the same level. They were not as well thought of in the eyes of God and in the eyes of man. So the number of different ideas which the Sfarno was drawing together over here, I just want to unpack them a little bit, and then we'll see the Sfarno will continue to mention and develop some of these ideas in the subsequent paragraphs. Chazal tell us, as is well known, that the shibud, the subjugation, the slavery in Egypt, did not begin until the last of the Shvatim passed away. I think we often interpret that Maimer Chazal to mean that it was the schus, the merit of the sons of Yaakov Avinu, that somehow prevented the catastrophe of the slavery from engulfing the Jewish people. The Sfarno, however, has a different take on that Maimer Chazal. The Sfarno understands, as we've seen before, and we're going to see it again in Parshas Shmos, that the reason the Jews were enslaved in Egypt was very, very simple. It was a punishment for how they acted in Egypt. The Jews in Egypt, as especially outlined by the Psukim in Yechezkel, strayed from the path of Torah, they embraced idolatry, they embraced foreign gods, and the slavery that took place in Egypt was really just a reaction to that. It was a punishment from the Ribbono Shel Olam for the fact that they weren't behaving properly. What kept them behaving properly? The Shvatim, when they were alive, had such an influence on the rest of the people that the people stayed on the path of Torah. So in other words, why is it, the Sfarno is essentially saying, that the Shibut, that the slavery began after the Shvatim passed away, after the last of Shvatim, Levi, passed away? It wasn't some kind of protective influence in a spiritual sense. It was a very, very simple calculus. The Shvatim kept the rest of the Jewish people on the straight and narrow. The minute the Shvatim died, and the Jewish people were no longer adhering to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the slavery upon them as a punishment from the fact that they had veered from the path. That's how we look at things, says the Sfarno. That's the influence that these Shvatim had. We should also point out that this idea from the Sfarno, that the true greatness of the Shvatim is expressed in the fact that not only were they tzaddikim, but they were able to have an influence on the people around them, is the theme which we've seen before in the Sfarno and seems to be one of his favorite themes. Namely, the pinnacle of tzidkus, of piety, is influencing the people around you for good. In other words, it's not enough, as the old Yiddish saying has it, to be a tzaddik in pelts. It's not enough simply to be a tzaddik who doesn't have any kind of influence on the rest of the world. The ideal of a tzaddik is somebody who is able to move other people to do the right thing. We saw this before in the Sfarno. That's the Sfarno is critical of Noach for not achieving this particular level. You know, he tried to give Mussar to the people, but he didn't do it properly. The Sfarno speaks about Avram Avinu's argument to the Ribbono Shel Olam to save Sodom. If there are chamishim tzaddikim besochoir, if there are going to be 50 tzaddikim in the midst of the city, says the Sfarno, what do you mean in the midst of the city? What, they have to live in Midtown? You know, they can't live in the suburbs or anything like that? No, it means besochoir, that they're tzaddikim not only for themselves, but they're tzaddikim who influence others. And the argument that Avraham Avinu had to the Ribbono Shel Olam is, don't just save Sodom in the merit of the tzaddikim. Why is it the fact that they're tzaddikim? Why should that save the Rishayim? The Rishayim deserve to be killed. The argument Avraham Avinu was making was, if you save a certain type of tzaddik, a tzaddik who's able to influence the people around him, he's besochoir, he's in the midst of the city, so then he'll transform the Rishayim into tzaddikim. So in other words, save the Rishayim because there's still some hope for the Rishayim. Not just save the Rishayim because in the merit of the tzaddikim. Save the Rishayim because maybe the Rishayim will become tzaddikim if you have the right tzaddikim as neighbors working upon them. So that's a theme that the Sfarno was very, very fond of, that the true measure of a tzaddik is the degree to which he's able to influence the people around him, and that's carried over in this discussion as well. The true tzaddikim, the Shvatim, the 12 tribes, were tzaddikim by virtue of the fact that they were ma'oros, they were luminaries, and they impacted upon the people around them. However, that generation, not only the 12 Shvatim, but v'chol hador hahu, all of that generation, passed away. Pasuk says, the beginning of Shmos, Yomos Yosef v'chol echov, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Vav, Yosef and all of his brothers passed away, v'chol hador hahu, and all of that generation. And of course, to the discerning reader, the question is, what's chol hador hahu, all of that generation? So Yosef and his brothers, that is the generation. Right? It sounds like there are three things. Yosef, his brothers, and that whole generation. What's the whole generation? So says the Sfarno, kol shivim nefesh. That refers to the list of the 70 souls that's mentioned back in Parshas Vayigash, the 70 souls who came down with Yaakov Avinu to Mitzrayim. Kol hador hahu includes them. So in other words, it's interesting. According to the Sfarno, kol hador hahu actually includes not only the generation of the brothers of Yosef, but actually the next generation as well, because many of the names listed in Parshas Vayigash are the children of the Shvatim. Now those children of the Shvatim, according to the Sfarno, are also people of great stature. How do we know they're people of great stature? He told us back in Parshas Vayigash. If they weren't people of great stature, they wouldn't have been listed in the list in the Torah in Parshas Vayigash. But there are different levels. The Shvatim were tzaddikim who were ma'oros. They were tzaddikim who were luminaries, who influenced the people around them. The next generation, the rest of the 70 souls who were mentioned in Parshas Vayigash, were indeed tzaddikim, but at least not ma'oros to the same extent. They were not luminaries. They were not, as they would put it nowadays, influencers, you know, to quite the same extent as the previous generation. Nonetheless, when they were alive, Klal Yisrael as well did not go off the rails. Shlobo hador l'kilkul gomur kol yemeihem. As long as the rest of the 70 souls mentioned in Parshas Vayigash were alive, even if they weren't the luminaries to the extent to which the Shvatim were, nonetheless, their presence and their influence kept Klal Yisrael on the path of Torah. But then, that entire generation, all of the people listed in Parshas Vayigash passed away. And we read the following pasuk. Uvnei Yisrael, pasuk Zayin, paru vayishritzu, vayirbu vayatsmu bima'od ma'od, batimolei ha'aretz osam. A lot of verbs in that pasuk. Article translates that pasuk as, the children of Israel were fruitful, They teemed, they increased, they became strong, very, very much so, and the land became filled with them. The simple pshat in the pasuk is that there are many verbs in the pasuk which are basically synonyms for one another, and they all describe how the Jewish people were fruitful and multiplied. Rashi, building on the fact that there are six expressions in the pasuk of growth, paru vayishritzu, vayirbu vayatsmu b'ma'od ma'od. There's six such expressions in the pasuk. So Rashi writes on the word vayishritzu, shahayu yoldos shisha b'keres echa. Very famous Maimer Chazal, that every time a woman would give birth, she would give birth to six tuplets. Right? There were six children born in any particular birth. The Sfarno has a different understanding of the word vayishritzu in particular. What's the word vayishritzu? So vayishritzu is translated by art school as teemed, presumably because it's related to the word sheretz, which means something which crawls upon the ground. And just as shrotzim produce, when they reproduce, they reproduce in great numbers, so, you know, in a somewhat similar sense, Klal Yisrael reproduced in great numbers as well. It's an expression of quantity. The Sfarno very interestingly understands that verb as an expression of quality. Achar shemesu kol shivim nefesh. After the 70 souls listed off in Parshas Vayigash passed away, and again, they were the influence that was holding Klal Yisrael strong to the ways of Hashem, notu ledarche shrotzim. When it says vayishritzu concerning Klal Yisrael, it's not a positive thing. It means that they embraced the ways of shrotzim. They embraced the ways of the lowly creatures which populate the world. And then it's not clear whether he means this really in the pasuk or just as a play on words. Shirotzim leve'er shachas. As we say in the Hadron, right when we finish a mesechta, you know, those who are not involved in Torah study, shirotzim, they are running to the be'er shachas, to the deep pit. That's a play on words, shrotzim, shirotzim, but whatever he means in terms of the interpretation of the pasuk, the Sfarno clearly understands the word vayishritzu as something very negative. It's not describing the phenomenal growth of Klal Yisrael, it's describing the phenomenal spiritual descent of Klal Yisrael. After the Shivim Nefesh pass away, Klal Yisrael, they go off the rails. They abandon the path of Torah. Uvechein, and therefore, what's the very next pasuk? Vayakom Melechadosh al Mitzrayim asher lo yadas Yosef. A new king arises in Egypt who doesn't know from Yosef. And of course, we're familiar with the Gemara, where the Gemara seems to be bothered by the following question. What do you mean? the new paro had never heard of Yosef. Okay, I understand he didn't learn Sefer Bereishis. I get it. But Yosef was a phenomenon. Yosef had saved the entire country. And it wasn't so long ago. It was really just a generation or two ago that Yosef was responsible for having saved the entire country, saved the entire world. So what kind of ignorance did this king have that he didn't know from Yosef? So here's the Svarno's take on it. It stands to reason, of course, that there was a historical record of Yosef. It's not that he didn't know from Yosef. Especially when you consider the story told at the end of Parshas Vayigash, where Yosef basically enabled the lands of the population of Mitzrayim to be given over to the government. So how could they forget about Yosef? Lo also alev hamelech echadosh efsharus hayoso mizeh ha'am. Paro certainly knew who Yosef was, but he couldn't imagine Yosef being connected to this people. He couldn't imagine Yosef being connected to this people called the Jewish people, who were now residents of Eretz Mitzrayim. What the Svarna sort of leaves unstated is why. Okay, it sort of half answers the question. Okay, he knows from Yosef. He knows the story about how Yosef saved Mitzrayim. He's just not aware that Yosef is Jewish. He doesn't make the connection between Yosef and these people who currently are inhabitants of Goshen. That's still strange. No? I mean, let him do just a little bit more research, okay? So he should, when he Googled, you know, Yosef HaTzadik, he should have just read to the end of the Wikipedia article. And then he would have found out. It doesn't sound like it was a state secret that Yosef brought his brothers and his family to go live in Goshen. So how is it that Paro didn't make the connection between Yosef and his descendants only a generation or two removed from Yosef HaTzadik himself? And I think what the Svarno is saying is as follows. He doesn't quite say it, but I do think it's consistent with the whole point that he's making over here. Klal Yisrael had transformed their mode of action so thoroughly that they were unrecognizable to Paro as being the Jewish people. Paro knew there was a person called Yosef who was second in command in Mitzrayim. And Paro knew that Yosef was incredibly devoted to this one monotheistic God. That Paro, according to that Yosef, had insisted that all the people in Mitzrayim circumcise themselves. And, you know, the name of God was on that Yosef's lips. Shem Shamayim Shagur Befiv. He was talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. And it was well known that the people who were associated with Yosef, his nation, were also people of stature, tzaddikim, who were devoted to the notion of one God. But the Jewish people today, those people living in Goshen, look at how they run to idolatry. Look at how they've abandoned the ideals that we associated with Yosef HaTzadik. It can't be that this current group of people who identify as being Jews have anything to do with Yosef from a few generations ago. Because that Yosef embodied values that are absolutely foreign to these Jewish people living in Mitzrayim right now. So if Paro doesn't show any favoritism or doesn't show any hakaras hatov, any recognition of, you know, the past events of Yosef, the past involvement of Yosef to the Jewish people, according to the Svarno, whose fault is that? It's the very veering of the Jewish people from Judaism that causes Paro to look at them with such a jaundiced eye. Asher lo yada es Yosef. Why didn't he remember Yosef? Of course he remembered Yosef. But Yosef has what to do with these people? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So in other words, that very gap in terms of where there should have been Hakaras HaTov, Paro instead looking to enslave the Jewish people, according to the Svarno, is a direct result of the Jewish people abandoning Torah. You think that by abandoning Torah you're going to ingratiate yourselves to the local rulers, to the local government? Adarabba, the exact opposite is true. You're distancing yourself from any possibility of being looked at in a positive way from Paro. Okay, so Paro, as we know, decides to make life difficult for the Jewish people. What's his motivation for doing so, and what is he hoping to accomplish? So here also, the Sfarno has a very interesting, somewhat atypical take on Paro's gzeros, on his attempts to put decrees on the Jewish people. He goes to his people, and he says to his people, "Hinei am b'nei Yisrael rava otso mimenu. This nation is greater than us. Havan is chakmalo. Let's deal with them in a stealthy way. Pen yirbe v'hoya kisikrenu melchama v'nosaf gamhu al sonenu v'nilcham banu v'ola min ha'aretz. We're afraid that if war comes, they will join up with our enemies and fight against us. V'ola min ha'aretz, and they will leave the land." Now, of course, the question is, and Rashi deals with this to some extent, what would be so terrible if the Jews decide to leave the land? It sounds like in the simple reading of the Pasuk that Paro's greatest fear is that the Jews are ultimately going to leave Eretz Mitzrayim. Okay? So if you're afraid of these people, and what you're afraid of is that they're going to pick up and leave, why does that bother you? I mean, you should make a l'chaim when they leave the country. So in trying to explain the Pasuk, the Sfarno asks us to reconsider the phrases a little bit, and he says as follows. V'ala min ha'aretz, right, the point of all of the decrees of Paro, says the Sfarno, is to try to drive the Jewish people out of the land. Me'atzmo. Let's try to make life so miserable for the Jews so that they leave of their own accord. We don't want to drive them out. People will look askance at us if we drive out the Jewish people. This we're looking at this group within us, and we see them as a threat. We see them as a fifth column. But you know, it doesn't look nice for us to drive them out of Mitzrayim. So let's havon ischak malo. Let us act stealthily with them, so that ve'ala min ha'aretz, so that we can make life difficult for them, so that they decide to leave on their own. Why would we do that? Because pen yirbe v'hoya kisikrenu melchama. Because there may be a war, and if there's a war, v'nosaf gamhu al sonenu, they'll join our enemies. Why will they join our enemies? Says the Sfarno, kibiyosam nivdalim imenu b'milo v'lashanu v'deya so ivrim. They're so different from us. They speak differently. They have different outlooks on life. We know, we spoke about this a week or two ago, that even with Yosef being the second in command in Mitzrayim, the Egyptians were reluctant to sit down and have a meal together with the Jewish people. So since they're so different, heim lanu la'ayvim b'li safek, they will certainly be enemies with us. V'yigalu sinasam oz be'ez hatzarasam al-chama. And when war strikes the land, that will be the test of the loyalty of the Jewish people, and we suspect that they won't be loyal. We suspect that because of their differences, they'll put themselves together with our enemies. So according to the Sfarno, and the Sfarno follows this in the next pasuk we'll see in just a moment, the original plan of Paro was, let's make life miserable for the Jews so that they leave. Right? That would be the best thing that we could possibly imagine. The Jews will leave, and then we won't have to worry about them anymore. And that's, the Sfarno goes on to say that in the next pasuk. Vayosim olav sarei misim. They put taxes on the Jewish people. Leman anoso besivlosam. In order to torture them in their sufferings, writes the Sfarno, kidei sheyaskimu lotzeis el eretz acheres. The original hope was, if we put so many taxes on the Jewish people, so they'll go to a place where there are no taxes, they'll leave the country. What happened? It backfired a little bit. Vayiven ari miskenos lefaro es pisom v'yas Ramses. The Jews started building these treasure cities, meaning heim kiblu aleihem lemas lefnosis ha'arim. The Jews were good citizens. Instead of saying, oh, you're imposing taxes upon us. We're going to leave, we're going to leave, we're going to leave. They said, okay, you want to put taxes upon us, not just a tax of money, but a working tax. You want to force us to do work? Fine, we're loyal citizens of Mitzrayim. We'll stay, we'll stay, we'll stay, and we'll help you out. So fascinating just to translate this into modern terms. When one thinks of the parallels between Egypt of Paro and Nazi Germany, Nazi Germany, of course, as we know, progressed to the point where the idea was to exterminate, lo aleinu, the Jewish people, and unfortunately our enemies were profoundly successful in that endeavor. But in the very, very early days of the Nazi Party, the stated objective of the Nazis was not so much to exterminate the Jews, but simply to get them out of Germany, to see them as, they saw them as an enemy, as a fifth column, as people who were not going to be loyal to the fatherland. And at least the stated objective was they should leave. Of course, at a certain point they closed the borders and they couldn't leave, but at least in the very, very early days, the stated objective was they should leave. According to the Sfarno, that's exactly how it happened in Mitzrayim as well. In the very beginning, Paro's objective was simply they should leave the country. They chose not to leave. And somehow the plan changed into, well, okay, if they're not going to leave, so then we'll enslave them and we'll take things from there. But the original idea, according to the Sfarno, was simply, v'alam min ha'aretz, that's our objective. We'd like to drive them out of the land and make sure that they don't cause us trouble because we're afraid they'll become a fifth column. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu, L'zakos es Yisrael,